Blog Talk Radio.
On October 30, 1990, a young woman by the name of Cynthia Lorraine Ricketts Richardson was executed and dismembered by her husband, Donald Glenn Richardson. Her body parts were scattered over a 50-mile area in and around the Columbia River in the state of Oregon. As if the abuse Cindy suffered at the hands of her husband wasn't enough, the state of Oregon delivered its own brand of injustice to not only Cindy and her family, but to a second family as well. That is, when Donald was released from prison after only a 25-year sentence for his heinous crime against his wife. When Donald was released due to a new law that had been passed by the state legislature, he committed a crime so horrible it should have earned him the death penalty. Sadly, he will be released from prison in 2023. The family has fought for years to keep him in prison even before he was released the first time. This is Cindy's story. This is finally the justice she nor her family ever received at the hands of the criminal justice system in Oregon, from the attorney general down to the psychiatrist who stated that he was not a danger to others. While he was awaiting trial for Cindy's murder, his defense attorney stated in court that it was just a garden variety murder. Now Cindy can rest and her family can find the peace that has eluded them for so many years. Justice for Cindy by Yvonne Mason, available today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Friday night, April the 14th, also known as Good Friday. It is the Friday before Easter, so I hope that wherever you are safe and you are listening, because tonight's show is going to be a real hoot. I can't wait to get started, but we got a little bit of house cleaning first. Yes, that was a shameless piece of promotion. That was my latest True Crime Justice for Cindy, and I highly recommend the book because my listening audience that lives in the state of Oregon, you need to start writing your legislators about the criminal justice laws in that state, because at any given time it could be you who are the victim of one of your loved ones that is the victims. Read the book and you'll understand what I'm talking about. The show itself is, I don't know, it's taken a life of its own. This morning, of course, y'all know I love to run my numbers because I'm that kind of girl. I'm a static person. I like stats. I like numbers. I like to see where I'm going and how I'm going to get there, though the latter may not always be true. But that being said, this morning I ran my numbers, and just this show alone, we are at 5,945 listeners. I'm going to say it again, 5,945 listeners just on the Blog Talk Radio show. That's 55 away from 6,000 just on this show. That doesn't include the podcast. It's just on Blog Talk itself. And, of course, I have to give a shout-out to my friends from Down Under, because the country of Australia is out-listening this show 3-1 to the U.S. I don't understand it, because we're a big country. We have a lot of people. Why are people in the U.S. not listening? But Australia does, apparently every night and then some. So thank you guys from Down Under. Thank you for being a part of my show and listening. I appreciate it very, very much. We are heard in over 51 countries, ladies and gentlemen, in places I never even heard of. Republic of Congo, the Russian Federation, Norway, Sweden, Italy, Finland, New Zealand, just to name a few. Of course, Australia and Canada and the good old USA. Now, when I started this show last July, my goal was to have 5,000 listeners in 6 months. Well, we surpassed that in no time. So I said, okay, we'll do 10,000. Well, we've surpassed that. I said, well, by the end of the year, we'll do 15,000. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as of this morning, we are 1,324 listeners away from 15,000. Because all total, with all the podcast and the show itself, this morning our listening audience was 13,676 listeners. Now, this includes where people come in and listen after the live show. And that is a wondrous thing to me because that tells me that people care about this show. It intrigues them, and they like to join us and learn things. So my goal now, because we're going to reach that 15,000 before July the 27th, my goal now is by the end of the year for 20,000. I see no reason why we can't reach it, especially when we're only 55 away from 6,000 just on Blog Talk Radio. And I have to give a shout-out to all of my guests, including the one that I have tonight, because they are the reason this show is successful. They promote their show. They get the word out there. They put the podcast up everywhere. They put the show up everywhere. And they come back. I don't know why, because I'm mean to them, but they come back, I guess. They're into that sort of thing. I don't know. But that being said, we have a ball on the show. We never know what's going to happen because it's not scripted, and I like it that way because when it's scripted, then we can't have fun. So without further ado, my guest tonight is an author. His name is Nick Carey, and he is probably one of the youngest guests that I've had on my show, but that doesn't mean anything. Age is nothing to me in this business because we are all on a level playing ground. He was raised in Ohio. And what I found interesting is from a very young age, he knew he was destined to be a writer. He's a lover of many creepy things, and he wrote his first novel when he was in sixth grade and then promptly burned it. We'll get into that one, too. Since then, Nick has always been trying to improve his craft. He won the VSA Young Playwright Competition in 2013, which was the same year his debut novel, Nevermore, was published. Nick has got his second book in the pike, which is set to come out sometime this year, and you better believe I'm going to twist his arm through the telephone to get him to launch his book on this show. It's called Levitt's Asylum for Special Children. Now, I can't wait to dig into these two books and why he likes all things creepy and why he promptly burnt his first novel. I would have kept it for posterity, but then that's me. So without further ado, Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, shall we just jump right in because we have a fun-filled hour. First of all,
please
tell me why you always knew you were going to be a writer. Let me use your word. You were destined to be a writer. When you wanted to be or you were going to be, it was your destiny. What prompted that? What made that such a prominent thing in your life?
Well, I guess it just goes back to telling stories. I always, even as a little kid, loved to tell stories and loved to use my imagination. And I discovered at an early age, one, I couldn't really socialize really well with people, and so what I would do is just grab a piece of paper and I would start writing stories. And I thought, you know, this is pretty cool because in my stories, anything could happen. It's almost like a radio talk show that's unscripted. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. Like your favorite character could die or one character could just say, you know what, I just want to go on an adventure and see where it goes. And even at a young age, I was like, you know, I just want to be a writer. I'm destined to be a writer. I mean, I don't have the good looks like some supermodels. I can't sing, whereas Jack. I could try yodeling for once, but that career would be very short-lived. And like, okay, why not just write stories and become, you know, a writer?
So how did you get from the knowing that you were destined to publishing your first book and also winning a playwright competition? That in itself is an honor and hard to do.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that is a long story. I guess the short answer would be I just sat down one day and I started writing, and the story idea came to me of a man in a circus who's a freak and falls in love with this different girl who's also a freak, and I just slowly expanded into my very first novel called Freak Show. And best feeling finishing the book, reading back on it was the worst feeling shortly thereafter, because I thought, you know, I'm destined to be a writer. I mean, I tell stories. I could try becoming a film director, but then you would have companies telling me what to make. But with a writer, I can make anything I want. And I told myself, you know, I'm just going to write. And after the first book got written, I destroyed it, I thought, you know, I want to try other things. I actually tried submitting when I was in seventh grade, like short stories to different writing competitions, different magazines and all that. And they promptly got rejected. I ended up getting rejected so many times that I almost made a competition out of it. I would write something, edit it, and then send it off and slowly take bets with myself saying, all right, if this doesn't make it, then we'll revise it. If it does make it, then sweet, we'll treat ourselves to something. And I think there was only like two poems that actually got published right around that time. And the entire time I'm going through school and all these different things, I found, especially with writing, you don't need to socialize with people when you're writing. I mean, that was like the best thing for me. You know, being in middle school and high school, having very little friends, having like five friends maximum. I mean, if I have five friends at once talking to each other, it was like freaking Woodstock. Okay, like, it was like the stars are aligned and everything's golden. But when I was writing, it was like, okay, I don't need to be bugged. I have something else to do, and I became really good at it. I saw that there are other people around me who were great writers, but they were like the wishy-washy type of writers, right? They were the ones that would start something, and then they would say, you know, I'm going to put this on the shelf. I'm going to wait until school's done. I'm going to do all these different things first, and then I'm going to come back and write. And I never understood that. I just told them, hey, just keep on writing, you know. Just keep writing, and your craft's going to get better. And I was always puzzled why they wouldn't. I mean, here I was going from middle school to high school, and I'm writing, and my extracurricular activity was either playing in the orchestra or writing books before playing in that orchestra. And I eventually found, as I was graduating high school, this competition with the VSA. And it was broadcast through the Kennedy Center. They promoted that an author with a disability of any type, mental, physical, could submit a one-act play. Well, I've been thinking to myself, you know, this business idea floating around my head for a couple of years, I would make either a killer short story or a great play. And I wrote it all down. I actually wrote it down in one sitting. And it took me like 2 hours just from start to finish, including editing. And I submitted it off, and a couple months go by. I think it was like 3 to 6 months went by. I graduated high school. I had moved out of my parents' house, and I moved actually over to Utah, following a girl there. It didn't work out. And lo and behold, one day I get this email saying, congratulations, your placement accepted, and you've won the VSA Young Playwrights Competition Award.
Wow.
And my parents actually did not believe me at that time. I called up my parents. I said, hey, Mom, Dad, my play got accepted. It's getting performed at the Kennedy Center. my parents were like, oh, good job. But they later told me, we didn't believe you. We ended up having to call the candy center just to believe it because either A, they were shocked, or B, they thought I was pointing their leg. And the candy center flew me down to Washington, D.C. I had a great time there. I met a couple other writers. I met Michael Patrick, Thornton? Yeah, Michael Patrick Thornton, who played Dr. Gabriel Fife on Private Practice. He was really cool, and they performed it, and I flew back, and it was actually in that month period of getting accepted at the VSA that Nicholas actually called me. And for those of you listening in, Nicholas Grabowski is the head publisher at Black Bed Sheet Books. He called me after I submitted my book Nevermore, and he said, hey, I like the idea. I want to publish it. And it got published.
Nicholas,
that's
good
the
people.
Short end of the story.
Good people. He is like me. He believes in allowing people to live their dreams. We are staunch supporters of that. And I understand rejection, Nick, because when I wrote my first book 30-some-odd years ago, it was rejected so many times I could wallpaper the house. But I didn't quit. And like you said, those other kids that said they wanted to write but would put it on the shelf, they didn't have that burning desire that you have, that need to put words to paper to tell a story. That's why they failed, because they didn't finish it. You didn't fail because you kept going. And to win a playwright competition, what an honor.
Oh, thank you.
That had have helped jumpstart your destiny and make you, after all those years of rejection, make you feel like, yeah, I've got this. And then for Nick to call you and say, I'm going to publish your book, you were probably walking on air.
Oh, I was. I was cheering so loudly in my apartment that the upstairs neighbors ended up having to call management because they thought somebody was getting hurt down below. So, true story. I was cheering. I was so excited. I was walking on air, and then out of nowhere, I'm hearing like management beating on my door, and I end up opening it, and there they were, just like, "Hey, you okay, man? Like, is everything good?" And of course, I'm like, "Yeah, everything's perfect."
Did you explain to them why you were cheering?
I did, yes, and they didn't believe me.
What is it with people not believing you?
It's probably a Utah thing, but I end up having to show them the actual email that both the Candy Center and Nicholas sent me before they believed me. And by that time, I think they were so convinced, like, okay, either this kid's going to be a really good liar or he's telling the truth, that they just said, okay, whatever, and walked off.
Well, you wrote something on, I believe it was your web page, that I agree with 100%, and I'd never heard it before. Thought I'd heard everything that Hemingway had said, but it struck a chord with me, and it's very true. And what you wrote is, and this is a quote, ladies and gentlemen, writing is the loneliest job in the world, and Hemingway is credited with that. And it is the loneliest job in the world because, yeah, you can get feedback from people and you can get their take on things, but in the big picture and the bottom line, is it you and the story and the computer or the notepad and the pen? It's you.
Yeah, it is. No, I'm glad you brought that up, because if anybody's listening who's a potential writer, consider yourself really blessed right now, because nobody told me this when I was starting out. Because I guess it's a starting writer's dream, okay? Imagine, writing the great book of our time, while sitting in Paris Villa. You can open up the windows. You'll see the Eiffel Tower. I mean, that's the expectation. And the reality is, like, for at least my writing corner, my apartment right now, it's just a bare wall and a table. I mean, there's absolutely no distractions. I'll sit down, I'll turn off the internet, and I usually do this late at night so that nothing can distract me. I mean, if somebody's calling me late at night, it's either an emergency or they just butt-dialed me. And so you sit down, and it's just like what you said. It's just you and the story. And sometimes you'll be sitting there and you'll type out 5,000 words. And the thing is, until it's finished, nobody's going to tell you, hey, good job. I mean, you might have a couple good friends that you show the first draft to, but they're going to say good job no matter what. I mean, you have to actually sit down. You have to isolate yourself from other people, and you just have to type. And that's a lesson I learned the hard way. I mean, yes, there are those writers who can work in groups and stuff like that. They do, like, group write-ins. And you'll find them in coffee shops, more likely than not. There's a coffee shop downtown Salt Lake City where, like, 5 or 6 writers will actually get together, and they'll write for an hour, and then they'll share. But in that hour, they are alone with their story. And it's bliss when you can actually get the results out, when you're sitting there, everything's working, all the gears are functioning properly. It's not so blissful when you're sitting there staring at the blank paper and you've got nothing. So, if anybody out there listening...
I understand that fully, because that is the most frustrating thing in the world. You know you've got the story in the back of your head, and you know the characters are dancing around wanting to play. But you sit down at the computer, and they go to sleep. They don't want to play anymore.
Yeah.
They're tired. They're over it. So you sit there, and you want to bang the keys on the keyboard just to wake them up, and then you get frustrated and have to go do something else. Trust me, I've been looking at my new storyboard for days now, and they don't want to play right now. And they won't play until they're ready. That's why it takes me so long.
Yeah.
And distractions are a detriment, because if you're, like you say, if you're banging out 5,000 words and all of a sudden you get distracted, then you have to go back and realign your thinking and get your mindset back in the right frame of mind, and then you've wasted a good 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there are times where I wish that there were 48 hours in a day. The 40 hours would be spent writing. The other 8 would probably be sleeping. But
I don't know. Sleep's overrated, Nick. Trust me. You're still young yet. Wait till you get my age. Sleep is way overrated. I do good if I get an hour and a half a night. And it gets so frustrating. Because you lay there and you toss and you turn, you flip and you flop. And you think, well, something's going to happen. I'm going to go back to sleep. And then you don't. And then the next day you're dragging yourself out of the bed, facing the day going, please just let me take a nap. And then you waste your time taking a nap. So yeah, it becomes a vicious cycle. So tell me what prompted you to write Nevermore, because you like all things creepy. Creepy how?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that first. Creepy how?
Oh man, we can fill like 8 radio shows just talking about that. Anything particularly creepy? I mean, my very first story that I actually read, I mean, this wasn't for assignment for school or anything, but the very first story that I read and appreciated, should probably add that on, was The Cask of Amontillado by Edgar Allan Poe. And I was in fourth grade when I read that. I mean, up until this point, I had been fascinated with, like, shipwrecks, tornadoes, trains, you know, the boyish stuff, and my teacher didn't have any of that in his classroom, but he had the illustrated, I believe it's the completely illustrated Edgar Allan Poe short stories. And they're each individually printed, so I could just pick out one, and the very first one I picked out was a cast of Montalto. And I thought that was just so cool. I mean, I read that thing like 8 times. I ended up getting nightmares from it, but I was so fascinated with not only the drawings, but who was this guy? This guy, Edgar Allan Poe, whoever he was writing the creepiest stories. I mean, these were the stories my parents wouldn't let me read. And it got down to a point where I was so fascinated that I would actually look up all the creepiest stuff that I could. I mean, and that ended up biting me in the butt sometimes because I would watch films such as Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. And I didn't know at the time that I was a little bit scared of snakes. So, you know, when the giant snake starts attacking people and people are just frozen there, you know, for a little kid, it's like, oh, wow, this is pretty dark and creepy. I mean, it scared me to a point where I didn't sleep for 2 weeks. But I then got so fascinated, like, why am I so scared about this? And I started looking up even creepier things. I remember watching Are You Afraid of the Dark or something like that, a TV series. It was middle 90s. It was made for kids. But there was one involving a clown. I forget what it's called, but it was just creepy, and I loved it. I mean, I loved watching everybody else I'm watching with just get scared of this giant grinning clown. And when the neighbors next door, I think they were the Freegees. Yeah, the Freegees. When they were showing it, my brother was like, oh, don't see it, it'll scare you. I actually went to the library when my mom brought me there. I found it. I managed to get away with her long enough to see like the creepy parts before returning the DVD, and I was just so fascinated. And that fascination turned into my love for the series Silent Hill. I mean, my friend Nixie, also known as Nevin Q, she just introduced me to Silent Hill, and I loved it. I love the lore. I love how a lot of horror stories will have lore behind them. It's not just the mass murderer in the woods chasing horny teenagers and slaughtering them down. No. Like, you have Cthulhu and Shoggoth and Pyramid Head and the nurses, and there's actually a story behind why people are there. And that ended up piling on to me loving all these creepy things, and I started writing all these creepy things. And my parents, God bless them, they kept on saying, you know, Nick, you should write something a little bit more happier. And I just kept on saying, you know, why would I do that? I want to see people get scared. I want to see people realize, you know, hey, this kid is the real deal. This kid could be the next Stephen King almost. And it was my senior year of high school. Actually, I know somebody's an author's talking about high school. Everybody's thinking, why is this kid on the radio? High school is like a lifetime ago, but it was my senior year of high school, and I actually got the idea of Nevermore while swinging at a park. Because in the story of Nevermore, there's a girl named Raven, and Raven's going through the teenage angst scene. Okay, cute boy doesn't like her, parents are fighting, they're getting a divorce, and so she decides to end it all, you know, commit suicide. But as she's contemplating this, she's on a swing, and she lets go of the swing and jumps off, planning on landing, and instead sprouts wings and flies away. She goes to this different world where she meets a couple other characters, and she goes on this adventure. You know, I wrote it when I was 19 years old. It was a pretty good concept at the time. And I actually got inspiration while I was on a swing at a park, because down the road from where I live in Ohio, there was this activity center. And if you go there any day on a cloudy day, it's deserted. It's nice. You have the entire park to yourself. You can walk around. You can swing. During the summer, they would have water. It was also doubled as a water park. So the water would be on. You could get cooled off. It was it was nice. And I was on the swing. I was in a little bit of a depressed state. I was swinging. And I was getting high enough that the chain would actually get slack. So I would come down, like, hit the chain and, you know, rock the entire swing set. And I just thought, you know, what would happen if I were to jump off and fly away? And the story just tumbled from there. I mean, I pictured this girl with black hair who did that and flew away. And the story just ran from there. It was actually the fastest time I ever wrote a story in my life. Nevermore clocks in around 50,000 words, and I wrote that in about 2.5 weeks.
Wow. And what people that aren't writers don't understand, it doesn't matter the age, and it doesn't matter mm-hmm. where you get the inspiration. It's the fact that we get the inspiration. And as I'm listening to you talk, there's one thing that stands out. You like one of my favorite authors. I've loved him since I was about fifth grade, Edgar Allan Poe. I've read everything the man has written. Nevermore was my favorite poem, still is, always has been, always will be. And for you to title your book Nevermore, name your character Raven, goes all the way back to Poe's poem, Quoth the Raven, Nevermore.
Yep.
I see a correlation there. And it's because of the influence that Poe had on you as a young child that helped break open that box so that story could come out.
Yeah, that you nailed it on the head.
That's absolutely amazing. Because as soon as you said that you had read Poe, I'm going, okay, I'm going to adopt this kid. Because he is without a doubt. I have other favorite authors, but Poe is without a doubt my absolute favorite. And he was totally unappreciated during his time. He died broke and broken.
Yeah.
His work was not appreciated, and it's literature now. I mean, it is classic literature, and in order to appreciate him, you have to read his work, because you when you read his work, you get into the mind of Poe.
Yeah, you do. I've loved Edgar Allan Poe since I was a kid. As a matter of fact, for my 16th birthday party, well, it wasn't much of a party. Nobody showed up. But my parents got me the collective works of Edgar Allan Poe. That's the only thing I asked for. Only thing for my 16th birthday party that I wanted. And I know, what 16-year-old boy wants the collective works of Edgar Allan Poe, right?
But I think it's magnificent. I would have killed to have gotten that collection at 16. I think it's marvelous. Well, the thing, Nick, what Poe did is Poe opened up a whole new thing for you, a whole new appreciation of all things creepy and mysterious and sad and depressive. And, yes, ladies and gentlemen, we write this sort of stuff. And things that go bump in the night.
Yep. Yeah, oh, he definitely did.
It pleases me and makes me very happy, and I know that sounds like an archaic term, but it excites me to know that someone, and ladies, for y'all that are listening, the young man's 22 years old, but that doesn't matter. He has an appreciation for classic literature, and I can't say that about a whole lot of young people these days.
Well, so, I think my parents, my mom and my dad had the great works on our bookshelf. And whenever I was bored, I would just crack open, like, Shakespeare, Homer, you know, Milton.
And again, we're talking all things creepy, because Shakespeare could be pretty creepy.
Oh, yeah, Macbeth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hands down.
Spot these damn spots. Yeah. And then Macbeth is wandering through the castle yelling because the bell is ringing. And then the witches. Yeah, that's my favorite all-time Shakespearean play. Love it.
Oh, I must ask then. Have you seen the Patrick Stewart version of Macbeth?
Yes.
Okay. That is my favorite adaptation. Why? Two words. Patrick Stewart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because he's a thespian actor.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah, he cut his teeth on theater, so that projects in the motion pictures, because when you're doing theater, you have to project your character for emphasis and so people can hear you, and that comes through when he did Macbeth.
It's my favorite adaptation by far. No question.
Absolutely. So you did Nevermore. And you were working on Levitt's Asylum for Special Children.
Yes.
Now, I don't want to give the whole thing away because I want to launch it. I want to bring you back when it gets published, and Nick will tell me, and you can tell me. Tell me a little bit of what it's. Tell us a little bit. Tease us with it.
Okay. Oh, man. So, there's a child psychiatrist. His name is Edward Harris. And recent graduate from medical school, whose wife, Emma, has started an affair with a local author in the state of Pennsylvania. Distraught, Edward goes into work, where he talks to a woman named Melody, a patient of his. Who's telepathic and telekinetic. And that day, Edward asked her to do the impossible task.
Ooh.
It's coming soon, folks.
When is it coming?
That's a good question. If Nick's listening, it can come out any time. Because I have a message. He was like, hey, it's going to be coming out, and he said either fall or spring, fall 2016 or spring of 2017. So it should be soon. And
I will have to say, Nicholas, we need to release the book so that my guy can come back on the show and we can discuss it. And we might even bring Nick back that night, too, so we can talk about it and Nevermore. Now let's go back to Nevermore for a few minutes.
Okay.
This young girl that comes, all goes off the swing and goes into an alternate universe. There's a story in that alternate universe. Is she supposed to help someone save a life, or what is she doing in that alternate universe?
Well, at first she doesn't know. And if I tell the entire audience, it'll spoil the entire story. But at first she doesn't know, but yeah. She finds out that the two worlds are going to be colliding in a way that would be catastrophic for everyone. Mm-hmm. And it involves an evil sorcerer. And her only purpose is to destroy the evil and bring back happiness. It's pretty much your typical good versus evil type of thing, except for teenagers.
See? There you go, ladies and gentlemen. This book is for teenagers. So if you're worried about it being too creepy, it's not going to be too creepy. It has a good and versus evil, and it's something that a kid can cut their teeth on. Maybe even someone that doesn't like to read a lot. This would be something to whet their appetite to read, would you say?
Wouldn't want to toot my own horn, but hopefully. I mean, there's no sexuality. There's, I think, only two swear words in the entire thing. Not much gory violence. Nothing all scary. I mean, for those of you who have been listening during the entire radio show, if you're thinking that this is going to be down the realm of Stephen King, it's not. I wrote this just because, for three reasons. One, I want to at least have a book that people can go, see, he's not too dark and it's not too creepy. Two, it was sort of a dare for my parents to write it. And three, it was written when you're 19 years old. When you're 19 years old, everything just golden and sunshine. Reality hasn't come in, kicked you where it hurts yet.
That's true. And when you're 19 years old, for the most part, there's always hope. And you see you see the light at the end of maybe a dark tunnel, and that's the way we should all feel. And maybe sometimes those of us that are older should step back into those young ages where it will be okay. Everything will work out. Good always overcomes evil. And I like the fact that you wrote this for teenagers, and even preteens could read this, could they not?
Oh, I would highly encourage it. I mean, if you don't like reading, if you don't want a long book, then Nevermore is definitely up your alley. It's not a long book. It's made for preteens and teenagers. It's very easy to read. It's actually embarrassing on the author's part for how easy it is to read. And from what I can tell, from what people have told me from reading the book, it's like they love some of the characters and they hate one character in particular, which was the point.
And that, like you say, that is the point of a good writer. When you can get your readers to either fall in love or fall in hate with the characters, then you've done a good thing. And it sounds like you did a good thing.
Oh, thank you.
Very impressive. Now, the Levitt's Asylum for Special Children, is it going to be in the same vein, or is it going to be for an older audience,
oh, no.
Or is it going to go across the spectrum?
It's definitely for upper teens into adults. My main purpose for writing the book was to write one of the scariest books of all time, to say the least. Around the time I have read House of Leaves, House of Leaves, which if none of you have read, go read it. It's like the Blair Witch Project, except in a book, and it's
sweet.
Creepy. And when I was writing it, I kept on telling myself, how could I make it creepier? How could I make this as creepy as humanly possible? And I took inspiration from film, and from what I have been told, it is one of the very first books to actually break the fourth wall and address the reader and do it like mid-story. So readers are out of the story, and then suddenly they're being brought in by one of the characters.
Interesting. But then I break writing laws all the time simply because that's what they're there for.
It's fun.
Of course it is.
So much fun. I mean, who says we can't start a sentence with and? I'll start all the sentences with and if I need to.
That's the truth. And who says you can't have a dangling participle, especially when that's the culture of the person that you're dealing with, that character, that's how they talk. So you dangle that participle.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, but Levitt's actually has a really interesting backstory. It's more interesting than Nevermore. Levitt's idea actually had been boiling inside of me for years because my grandparents live in the town where it's set. They live in a town,
wow,
Monongahela, Pennsylvania. And if you ever visit Monongahela, it's a very small town. The population is like 5,000 people. But they have that small town, big town attitude where you can go in there and you'll go to, like, I don't know, some guy named Jim. And Jim knows Mark, who knows Greg, who owns an old car shop just up the hill, where if your car's breaking down, you can go up and, you know, get your car fixed, right? And the last time I was there was a few years back, and I had always hated sleeping in one of the rooms because it was creepy. I mean, you open up the closet, and there was an extra door that would lead into another closet that had, like, it was a pretty cool place to write because it was, like, nice and quiet, had a little desk and all that. But you come out there, and you have another closet with a staircase that led up into the ceiling. So
wow.
So you're asleep at night, and you hear something on the ceiling, your only comforting thought is, well, maybe the door is locked, because even the lock would work. But when I started on Levitt's Asylum, I had that thing on a thumb drive for the longest time, and the story that it's now is completely different from the original story, because I had been writing on the original story, and I was taking it in an area where I was sort of okay with it, sort of wasn't. And my thumb drive became corrupt, and I lost the entire story at the 60,000 word mark.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. I lost
that's painful.
It was. For the entire week, it was one of those go around, be ticked off at the world type deals where you're so mad at anything that moves that I didn't go to class, I didn't interact with people, quite literally sat in my room and watched movies for an entire week straight, but that didn't help. And it was only after I moved to Salt Lake that I ended up saying, you know what, I need to rewrite it. And I rewrote it using all the memories I had of Monongahela, and in particular, Monongahela when they get fog, because they get fog like it's clockwork. Okay? You wake up, you're bound to see fog. But it's not like, you know, the gentle rolling fog. It's the fog that, you know, you feel like there's going to be animals that want to attack you in that fog. Sort of like Silent Hill. And I used that, and I said, you know what? I want to make this the atmosphere. I want to capture the dialogue that could happen and the accents that were all around that place. And I started working on it, started doing all my research that I could about the place, based the innkeeper in the book on my grandma and grandpa, and when I finished, the first thing I did was I backed it up with like 3 different files just in case one of them went corrupt, because I was paranoid, and I sent it off to Nick, and Nick replied with, it's unique, which I'm thinking, great, thanks, Nick, and he goes, but it's really scary, and I'm thinking, goal achieved. This is all I wanted. And the only bad part... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, finish.
And the bad part is I'm now sort of thinking, all right, maybe I need to write the prequel/sequel, because if you read the book, ladies and gentlemen, you realize that there's a lot of lore that could be explored, and there's a possibility for a sequel/prequel that could be into one book. So stay tuned.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And see, Nick loves all things horror. That's Nick. Nick's a horror freak show himself. He just loves horror. And for him to tell you it's creepy, it's creepy. I've known Nick a long time, and he's been out there a long, long time, and he knows good writing. So, we got to get this book out so you can come back and tell us all about where your grandparents lived and some more about that. There would be a story. You could do a book on the house alone where your grandparents lived.
Oh, don't get me started, because I mean, dang it. I might actually have to now.
I see it. As you're talking about it, I'm thinking closet, go in another closet, another door, upstairs. Sounds like the house is at least over 100 years old. That could have been used to hide slaves. It could have been used to hide immigrants. It could have been used for anything.
Mass murdering.
There you go.
Let's not be around the bush here. Let's just get everything that we can.
Okay. So see,
I guarantee
now you, and you're dealing with the fog, and Sam knows Joe, who knows John, who knows Peter, who knows Paul. Oh, yeah. Let your imagination run away with you.
Oh, man, I might actually have to do that now. Thanks.
Absolutely. Well, you're welcome. Now my work here is done.
No, there's actually a really funny story between Nicholas and myself, and he doesn't even know about this. So if Nicholas is listening, this is going to be a little bit of a surprise for him. So, ladies and gentlemen, Nicholas Grabowski, my publisher, he wrote the book for Halloween 4. And I love the Halloween franchise. Number 4 is actually really good. And I read the book as well. And I was at my local thrift store. And I love thrift stores because you can find anything creepy at a thrift store. And it doesn't have to be creepy. Like, you can find a record that's been warped. And so you will see, and even the front picture's been warped. So instead of, like, Beatles Sgt. Pepper, you get, like, this demonic 60s color going. I love it. And I actually found a copy of Halloween 4 signed to some girl named, I think it was, like, Alice or something. I'll have to take a look. But it's signed by Nicholas Grabowski. And it's like the vintage 1980s one as well, if I remember correctly, like 1880s version. He was way before his time. No, 1980s, 1990s. And what was great was you went to the back of the book, and it's signed by none other than Clive Barker.
Yep.
Clive freaking Barker. They didn't even have to sign his own book.
Hold on to that book for dear life.
Oh, don't worry, I will.
I would put it in a safety deposit box. And ladies and gentlemen, for those of y'all that don't know my friend Nick, he's been in this business for a long, long, long time. And he's like me. He's been rejected more times than not. But like me, he just kept putting one foot in front of the other. And like me, he's helping people like Nick Carey become successful. And I love Nicholas with all of my heart. He is one special human being. My daughter just thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. He is one of the most generous human beings in the world. And for you to have found that book, it was destined for you, Nick. That book was meant to be yours.
Well, I did hear the angels sing when I picked it up. Whether or not they came from heaven or from hell is a different question.
It doesn't matter. That book was meant to be yours. And can you believe that we are almost to the end of our show?
What? No.
Yes. So what I need for you to do is tell the folks where you can be found and where Nevermore can be found, and tell me you'll come back so we can talk about you some more.
Oh, I'll come back any time. Just shoot me, not literally shoot me, but give me a message over Facebook. But I'm located in Salt Lake City, Utah. Nevermore can be purchased online through Nicholas Grabowski's website on Amazon. And you can friend me on Facebook. If you're already friends with me on Facebook, you can unfriend me on Facebook. I won't take offense. And, yeah, I mean, if you have any questions at all, just give me, just always ask. I'm always open.
And ladies and gentlemen, this young man is going to go far, I'm going to tell you. Anybody that reads Edgar Allan Poe in the fourth grade and understands Edgar Allan Poe in the fourth grade, this is one genius.
Oh, thank you.
He is a magnificent human being, and he deserves to be read. Teach your children to read and start them off with Nevermore. Would that be a fair statement?
Just say
yes, Nick. Just say yes.
Yeah, that would be a very good statement.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know I always end the show with my philosophy. And my philosophy is this. If you have a dream, and I don't care what that dream is, Nick doesn't care what that dream is. But if you have a dream or your child has a dream or someone that you care about has a dream, if you don't support them in that dream or if you don't support yourself in your dream, then one of these days you will kick yourself. Because, number one, we only go around once. If we come around again, it's not the same dream. Number two, you don't want to be the person at the end of your days that has regrets. If you want to jump out of an airplane, go jump out of an airplane, but just wear your parachute and pull the cord. You, our entire world is made up of things made by dreamers. Our internet, our telephones, going to the moon. Heck, even the food we eat that is pasteurized, homogenized, canned, and almost not food anymore, it was done by dreamers. Nick had a dream. He made that dream real. And it's like he says, it wasn't he wanted to write. He knew he was destined to write, and he has to write. Would that be a fair statement, Nick?
That'd be a very good statement. Thank you.
If he doesn't write, he gets, like me probably, cranky.
Yep.
See? And it doesn't matter that it is the loneliest thing in the world to do. Because that's our, I don't know about Nick, but that's my happy place.
Yes.
When I can sit down and write. Go ahead.
I said it is for me as well.
It's where we are truly ourselves. We don't have to wear a mask. We don't have to get anybody's permission, and we don't have to make anybody else happy. We don't have to worry about anybody else's happiness. All we have to do is make our characters come to life. Would that be a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement.
So, ladies and gentlemen, live your dream. Life's too cotton picking short. And if you allow someone to steal your dream, then it's on you because they can't steal it without your permission. And another thing y'all hear me say at the end of every show is the only way to achieve greatness is to stop asking permission. And it's also better to ask forgiveness than it is permission. I never asked permission. I quit asking permission when I was 2 years old. And the only, if you don't ask the question, you're not going to get an answer. And if it's no, so what? I don't take no. Nick doesn't take no. We just do our thing. And you're going to find the world's a better place when you do your thing because you're happy in your skin. And it doesn't matter what the rest of the world thinks. That's on them, not you. Would that be a fair statement, Nick?
That's a very fair statement.
So that's my thought for the night, ladies and gentlemen. To achieve greatness, stop asking permission. Tomorrow night, my friend Chris Plain will be here. He's a radio host, a DJ, and a music wizard. That's always interesting when he is on the show. The man knows more about music than anybody else that I know. So join us at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time right here on Off the Chain. And, Nick, thank you, my dear, for coming on my show and talking about yourself and your work and your dreams and Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It makes me so happy when I can talk about Poe and Shakespeare and all the classics. Don't hang up. When the show goes dark, I have some instructions for you. So don't hang up when we go off the air. So, ladies and gentlemen, go and get Nick's book. Go on Amazon or go on Black Bed Sheets and look up Nevermore. Order it for your children. They'll love you for it. Teach them how to read. Help them read. Help them to get into books. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, Chris Plain will be here. Be ready to learn some music. Come and learn things. And we will bring Nick back. I promise. It will be fun because we will learn more things from this young man who is going far. So until tomorrow night, I am your host, Yvonne Mason. This is Off the Chain, and we say good night. Okay, we are off the air, but Anything we say will go up into the archive show. But what I wanted to tell you is when we get off, when we hang up, the show will work itself up into the archives. And when it archives, I will put the link on Facebook and I will tag you in it. You take that show and put it anywhere you want to put it. This is my gift to you. Use this show to your advantage. And then tomorrow, when I put up the podcast on Spreaker, SoundCloud, MixCloud, Podcast Garden, and podcast.com, I will put the link up on my page and tag you in it as well. Now, we are heard. You're welcome. We're heard on Blog Talk. We're heard on those five podcasts. We're heard on FM.com, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and I think two or three others out there that I can't remember. So that's how we're heard in over 51 countries all over the world.
Wow, that's really amazing.
Yes. So see, my friend, you are getting out there.
Wow, thank you.
You are quite welcome. So as soon as we're gonna hang up here shortly, and then as soon as it goes up, I'll send it all to you, and then tomorrow I'll put the rest of it up. And I want you to use this. I want you to post it everywhere, on your website, on your Facebook page. Tag your friends in it and say, go listen to this show. And then they will tag others, and that's how it spreads, like wildfire.
Okay, perfect. I shall.
All right, darling. So I'll get with Nick, find out when your book's coming out, then we'll get you set up. Hopefully it'll be August or September, and hopefully August, because June and July are already full. May, June, and July are already full. So we may have to do it in August, but we can do it in August. That's no big deal.
Oh, perfect.
And then, see, you'll have the third story with your grandparents' house and the fog and all the extra closets and the stairs going up to the attic and the creepy people coming down.
Dang it, now I have to actually go out and write it.
Yes, you have to actually go out and write it.
Yes, yes, that will definitely happen. A little novella just for Nick.
I can't wait. See, now you've got me excited.
Oh man, can't wait.
So, my dear, that is your assignment for the next 4 months.
Okay, it'll be done.
All right, Don. Thank you for being on the show. It has been a hoot and a half, and I have loved every minute of it.
Thank you for having me. I loved it.
And we will talk again later.
We shall. Thank you.
Good night, darling.
Good night, Yvonne. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye.